Let go of everyday worries and find your calm with positive prayer from Silent Unity, the newest in voice-activated technology, available on any Alexa-enabled device like the Amazon Echo. Each prayer and meditation on positive prayer will help strengthen, guide, and comfort you. To enable it, just say, "Alexa, open positive prayer." You can ask for a specific prayer on topics like healing, prosperity, and comfort. Give it a try today. We're glad you found us. This is Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Welcome to World Spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions, with your host, Reverend Paul John Roach.
So hello and welcome to World Spirituality on the Unity Online Radio Network. Yes, I'm your host, Paul John Roach, coming to you from Fort Worth in Texas. And we just wrapped up a four-part series on the nature of new thought today. It's been a very fascinating four-week series. And today's show kind of piggybacks a little bit on that because we're looking at multiculturalism and interfaith and how those important topics fit into the Unity teaching, the Unity movement. And joining me, and I'm really excited to welcome her, is Unity Minister Victoria Echemendi. She's the chair, actually, of the Global Initiative Interfaith and Multicultural Team at Unity Worldwide Ministries. She's served on many other ministry teams in her career. She's been a minister, I think, since 1980, and has served on regional associations, and therefore brings decades of experience to her role. And like I said, she's going to talk to us about her work on that team and also the idea of multiculturalism and interfaith in general and how that impacts our world. So it's a joy to welcome Victoria to the show. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Paul. I'm thrilled to be here. The part about decades kind of hit me, but you're right. It's been decades, and I'm so thrilled that Unity has this opportunity to spread the word.
We have to own it, right?
Exactly.
I want to start by going back to the origins of the Unity movement. You know, when Charles and Myrtle Fillmore, the co-founders of Unity, when they established their teaching, it wasn't meant to be a new religion. It wasn't meant to be anything that was separate from other traditions. It was meant to enhance people's traditional ways of worship, right? Ways of approach. And that ecumenical aspect has always been a strong one. And of course, in Silent Unity today, the Unity's prayer ministry, we'll notice that, you know, many of the people who call in are not Unity students. They are Catholics, they are Baptists, they are all denominations. And this is the, you know, continuation of that sort of ecumenical viewpoint. Charles didn't want to establish his own church. He wanted to help people have a more practical, dynamic understanding of their own tradition. So this is an important element, isn't it, that Unity has always been trans-denominational, has always reached out to others.
Exactly. And Charles and Myrtle Fillmore, their spiritual journey was very eclectic. They didn't just go in one vein. They studied the world religions, and they were open and seeking new information and ancient wisdom. So they were like sponges, and they were excited and thrilled to find all these teachings and to also find much of the harmony in the world's religions. So one of my favorite quotes from Charles is, "Let our centers be like experimental laboratories, always experiencing and experimenting with spiritual practices and ideas." And I found that when I was doing some research a few years ago, and I went, wow, that's it. I love thinking of our ministries and our outreach programs being experimental laboratories in spirit, that we're always growing, always evolving, always changing. And my friend Mike Moran, Reverend Mike Moran, said, I love this one also, have we become like a museum, or do we continue to expand in consciousness and take the Fillmore teachings and grow it? And I think really that's what Charles and Myrtle would have wanted.
Well, there's a kind of dichotomy, isn't there, push and pull in the unity movement between those who are, you know, what we might call Fillmorean, who want to go back to the teachings of Fillmore, and then those that are more progressive, who want to say, like he said, you know, life unfolds. We have new understanding. And my view is that, you know, if Charles and Myrtle were alive today, they would be on the cutting edge of spirituality.
Exactly.
They're not, their ideas may have changed from what happened 100 years ago. Not that they didn't have wonderful things to say, but it's not written in stone. I mean, just like the Bible. I've got to tell a story, by the way, just as an aside. I was having lunch yesterday in a restaurant, and I overheard two ladies, and I know you shouldn't be eavesdropping, but it was hard not to because they were speaking rather loud. And they're obviously church ladies. They were praying for other people. They were doing good works, whatever. I could hear the whole conversation. And then they were talking about one friend who, and they said, this friend has weird ideas, extra biblical ideas. The idea that if you've never heard of Christ, you get a second chance. And I thought, well, yes, I hope so. But to them, you know, the second chance was not in the Bible. You know, if you don't know Christ, you're going to hell. And unity is the antidote to that, isn't it? It's saying that all people are worthy, whether they've heard the word, quote, or not, you know, because within our hearts is the word. And in fact, you know, in my interpretation of the Bible, it says that, you know, God has written his name on our hearts. It says that in Jeremiah. Then we are, you know, and Jesus said the kingdom of heaven is within you. So this idea that we can be condemned because we don't know Jesus is ridiculous to me, because Jesus as the Christ is always with us.
Well, the unity movement, I love this. Here's another Charles quote. The unity movement has no creed and welcomes people of all creeds. So that sense that there is only one way, I remember as a child being told that in Sunday school, and I, even as a small child, objected. I said, that's not true.
Right.
Children in Africa, children all over the world that may not have heard these teachings, they're not doomed. So it was something I could never accept. My great-grandmother was a Unity student. Gave me a prayer for protection in my first wallet when I was 7, and really helped me develop some of these ideas, and really taught me to look for the good, to be open and receptive to all kinds of people. And I was also, someone told me this, and I don't remember who it was, that in order to develop the metaphysical Bible, Charles and Myrtle studied with rabbis. I mean, they knew that's where the information was. And so what the names meant and all of those things was quite, they went to the source. They weren't limited in what they thought. They were willing to learn. And that, to me, is one of the most important things in unity, that we're always learning. We're always, things are always being revealed to us. Things are always, Spirit is guiding us. There is no stop sign. I reached a certain age, or I got a certain degree, or I did this or that. Thank goodness, after all these decades, as you said, I'm still learning. I'm still growing spiritually, and I think that is one of the unity messages that we want to remember.
Absolutely, very important. And of course, you're right about the Metaphysical Bible Dictionary being co-written, you know, by Jewish scholars. And we know from the Jewish tradition that there's at least four levels of interpretation of any text, you know, and you know the literal, the allegorical, the metaphysical, or the metaphorical, and then the mystical. And you know, we find a great similarity there in the teachings of unity, because you know we don't just look at the literal meaning; we look at its metaphysical significance, its symbolic meaning. And then at the deepest level, you know, that mystical understanding, you can't work out with your head. You have to come to in your heart, in your intuitive awareness. So all those levels are there, aren't they? And to dismiss something because it doesn't make sense literally, mm-hmm. or it doesn't conform literally to something. It's a very small level of understanding, right? And Charles Fillmore always said these things must be spiritually discerned, not literally discerned.
Writing out my papers for getting into ministerial school, seminary, it's a living book. And you hear people say that, but I don't know what they actually mean by that. To me, every time I go to a certain verse or I read a different story or I'm teaching something, I go, oh, yeah, because I'm different. So the Bible to me is always living, just like all spiritual traditions and all great textbooks and ways of understanding spiritual laws and metaphysics has always been my favorite. That's, you know, I love the historical, I love the, all of that, but that metaphysical, how does that apply to me and the world around me?
Absolutely. It's interesting. I was just reading parts of the Red Book by Carl Jung. And in part of the Red Book, he in one of his dreams, Jung visits an anchorite in the desert, a monastic. And the monastic only has one book, which is the Gospels. And mm-hmm. the figure of Jung in the dream says to him, you know, how could you be so many years in the desert, you know, and just have this one little book? And the anchorite says to him, every time I read it, I get a new meaning. If it's only one meaning you get from that book, then it's a poor book indeed and a poor consciousness. You know, you always have to be open to new understanding. And I think that's so true, isn't it? There's enough for eternity in a text like that. You know, there's so many levels and understandings. And I know for myself, if I read something one day and then come back to it another day, the meaning may be totally different, you know, because I'm bringing a different part of my consciousness to it, or something that I thought I understood will wake me up again, mm-hmm. and now I see there's another ramification to that meaning, and you know what Jesus was saying. So very fascinating in that regard, you know.
Right, and it touches different parts of us because we're different. We, once again, you know, our body is changing, the cells and molecules. We're being reinvented every day. We're being, you know, if we want to use that term, reborn every day, physically, mentally, spiritually. So that is an awakening. When I was growing up, my mother worked with international students, and she hosted them for United Church Women, and they would live with us from a couple of weeks to a couple of months. And they were from all over the world. Now, this is the 50s, so that was a little unusual. And I had the opportunity to see, you know, Sufis and Sikhs and Hindus and, you know, natives from South America, all kinds of people, all color, all cultures and dress and everything. And they sat at our little kitchen table in St. Louis eating American food. And as a child, I realized we're all the same.
Well, no wonder you've always had a deep interest in multiculturalism then, and interfaith studies, because it's imbued in you from a young age, right? That's fascinating.
It is. So, and my mother would have coffees, and these people, their countries might be at war, but they'd show each other pictures of their families. And I went, this is today I call it the common thread, is our care and concern for our humanity. And this is the core to me of what we're talking about in our world today. This is you know, a pivotal moment, if we could say that, in our world today. Do we care more about our humanity?
Of course, we're dealing with, as we speak, as this show airs, we're dealing with the fallout from the terrible atrocity that happened in the synagogue in Pittsburgh. And as we speak, there's funeral services taking place. Mm-hmm. And I think it's the greatest atrocity against Jewish people in the history of our country. So, you know, the stakes are high here when horrific things like this are happening. And luckily, a lot of people are reaching out and crossing denominational lines or religious lines, mm-hmm. you know, to meet these people. And they're, of course, reacting with great dignity, and some of the statements by the congregants and by the rabbis of that community, you know, have been a very, very heartwarming, haven't they? But, you know, it's a shocking thing when these atrocities happen in our own country. And very much so. I know that, you know, I think there was a rabbi who was unfortunately a messianic rabbi who gave one of the prayers at the prayer service they had recently. And, you know, he spoke of Jesus Christ. So that created a bit of consternation. But, you know, the other side of that is that there are all kinds of people. You know, there's Jews, there's messianic Jews, there's Christians, etc. So, you know, we need to get over the fact, oh, my goodness, we shouldn't be referencing Jesus in this circumstance. Right. But maybe that's, you know, part of this, you know, is the breaking down of keeping everything separate and understanding that these are just names, right? They're names for the same thing, really. You know, they're loaded with sectarian meaning sometimes, and it's part of Unity's work is to break that down, I think, to see it in a different light.
Exactly. Well, Gandhi had a picture of Jesus and read the Gospels, as well as, you know, many other faiths and a variety. Mahatma Gandhi did interfaith prayers every morning at sunup and every afternoon at sundown. Whether there were hundreds of people or 10,000 people, they all gathered. And he truly believed that to find peace, we would have to come together and be willing to accept each other's differences religiously. Not politically, he didn't. Even though he worked in the political arena, he totally felt that the religious divisions were what was keeping us from finding peace. When I started my, after I'd been in ministry 10 years, I started a ministry called the World Healing Center. And I started it with the intention of having it be very involved in interfaith. And the very first year, 10 people in a little basement in an art center, we had a Muslim imam, and he's a very good friend of mine to this day. So it really is about reaching out beyond. And people say, well, how do you do that? Well, you look them up, you ask them to tea, you build relationships, and that is the key, is a difference is built on thinking someone is the opposite or different. When you're in communication and build relationships, you find that we are all more similar than we are different.
Yeah, and I was heartened to hear the news yesterday that, you know, a Muslim-based community had created a GoFundMe account, you know, for the victims and the families of the synagogue. Mm-hmm. In Pittsburgh, mm-hmm. and as of yesterday, they'd raised the goal was like $20,000, I think, and as the goal yesterday, the amount yesterday was $140,000. So, outpouring of support, and that's coming from Muslims, you know, and the Jews and the Muslims are not well known for getting on. So this is wonderful when there's that sense of brotherhood there, because we are one in truth. Let's move on to another theme that I wanted to cover, and that is, you know, in the tradition of Unity, a big emphasis has been placed, because we talk a lot about metaphysics and changing your mind, changing your life, changing your consciousness. A lot of emphasis has been put on personal transformation. You know, you change yourself, and then you go out and do something in the world. And a lot of the emphasis, therefore, has been on personal transformation, and we haven't really talked a whole lot about how we make that practical, you know, in terms of social action and interfaith, until recently, right? And so many Unity churches just don't get involved with that, at least they haven't. And I guess there's nothing wrong with that, right? There's both sides. We need to transform ourselves. You can't really be truly helpful, can you, until you've woken up in your own consciousness, right?
Well, you know, that's not, I've heard many people say the opposite, that when you're helping someone else, you're helping yourself. When I reach out and care about someone else. So we can see it both ways. I don't think there's a right or wrong, but that's one of the differences. When I began my ministry over 25 years ago, we started working with the homeless, we started working with the local schools, we started working with the food pantry, and we have been in service, now I'm retired, have been in service, and that has really been what people are hungry for. And I think particularly the young people, millennials, they're tired of talking.
Mm-hmm.
They want to take action. And I think it's time. We've been doing a lot of it, and I think probably ministries have. But, you know, back in the day, we were almost told, well, people have to help themselves. And that was part of in some unities, I'm like, really? Because that wasn't the model that I grew up with. So I've been a real advocate for, once again, I have to thank my mom. She was out there. She was in the NAACP, and she was holding baby showers for unwed mothers that we didn't know. This is in the 50s. And so she volunteered in every arena. That was my model. But a lot of people didn't have that model. So
right.
I think it's really important in unity, and I think it's critical if we're going to thrive.
Right, and you know, in my own ministry, I'm retired too, but you know, we did various things pretty much every month of the year in some sense of a social action, whether it be going to the local people impacted by HIV/AIDS or supporting various other agencies through our tithes and working on Habitat for Humanity and you know what, many other projects that we felt, you know, you have to put your feet on the ground and get moving, right? Put
I
it
agree.
Into practice in your life. Not to forget, though, that it's important to have that basis in metaphysical understanding so that we could really go and teach that as well, you know, but teach it through service, not just laying a trip on people, because we don't proselytize in unity, do we? We don't tell people how to believe, right?
I always say we don't have answers. We have really good questions. So we'd love to discuss something with you, but we're not going to tell you what to do.
Right. Yeah, you know, and that's an important point, actually, you know, that is it necessary to have all the answers? Because God is a verb, right? And we are verbs. Mm-hmm. Too, we're constantly unfolding, moving, changing, and so the answers for yesterday may not suffice today.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that we don't have principles to live by, which we do, but we don't have it all locked down. And I love that idea, you know, that life is an endless exploration, as we said earlier. You know, I keep quoting T.S. Eliot in that regard. All men should be explorers, and that means old women and young men and young women, all of us, you know, never stop exploring, because that's the whole of life is a mystery anyway. If anybody says they understand it, they're probably, you know, either ready for the lockdown or they're pretending, right? So we have to, part of the life is surrender to not knowing, and we don't like that. You know, we want to know everything, want to control everything, but we can't control. We can only participate and allow, I think. And those are more powerful things when we allow the Spirit to move in and through us, whatever that means for you, you know, whatever that speaks to you as.
And we certainly don't know what's right for anyone else.
Yes.
And I think that's the hardest part.
Yes.
Especially with a partner or your children, we're just sure we know what's right or how to fix that, because everyone has their own guidance. And I think that's one of the hardest things of parenting, the hardest, not that you're not the support and the guide, but you really, for children to grow and mature, they have to find that personal guidance, and they have to learn to trust it. And I think, once again, that's something that Unity offers is in working with our youth, is that they have their answer, and they can trust that answer, and they are divinely guided. They are the expression of the One. So I think it's really important that we're clear about that. We don't get fuzzy about that. because we like, I'll speak for myself. I sometimes get fuzzy about that because I'm sure I know that there's a right way to load the dishwasher.
Well, there we go. Well, you know.
My husband and I have a little disagreement about that.
And just so in terms of politically, too, it's
things.
Difficult sometimes. But,
yeah.
You know, as Jung talks about, you know, the shadow is an important part of who we are. And so often we project the shadow on others. And we see that projection so keenly, I think, where each side is projecting on the other, you know, the worst of everything. But the good news is that we have to integrate our shadow, right? We have to understand it. So maybe things are coming out in a certain way so that we get to look more keenly because, you know, complacency is an enemy to the spiritual path, I think. You know, at least we're not so complacent now. There's a lot of people moving their feet. There's a lot of people voting, you know, wanting to get out there in a way that we haven't seen because, you know, at the last election, over 100 million of our fellow Americans didn't vote, you know, and that is unbelievable to me, you know, that the majority of people, almost the majority, didn't vote. And, you know, we need to enliven and excite these people so that they will exercise their constitutional right. It's a hugely important thing. Whichever side you're on, when this isn't political, it's saying that this is part of our societal a privilege and a freedom that we have, you know, to vote. And so when there's that many people not voting, it's kind of sad, isn't it?
It is. And and we want to be sure that the young people, I mean, I think that's part of it too, that it's not a resignation. Oh, it doesn't matter. Oh, I can't make a difference. Well, yes, you can. Yes, you can. I'm privileged to be a good friend of Arun Gandhi, and I've known him for the grandson of Mahatma Gandhi and worked closely with him for 10 years. And just recently we had him at several events in Portland.
Hold that thought, Victoria, and we'll come back to it after the break. I hear the music.
Okay.
That means we're going to listen to these messages from Unity. Join us after the break. We'll talk about Arun Gandhi. All right.
Discover the power within. Unity Online Radio. The voice of an awakening world.
It takes you to power Unity Online Radio. If you'd like to make a positive difference in the world, you can by contributing to this global ministry. Unity Online Radio relies on listeners like you to support our broadcasts that send our messages out to an awakening world. Go to unityonlineradio.org and click on Donate today.
Here's a Unity Meditation Minute with sound healer Terry Wilder and Mystical Gong Meditations.
Take some time right now and give yourself this minute of meditation. Breathe in and breathe out. Meditation, because some questions can't be answered by Google. Stop for a minute and give yourself this gift of mindfulness. Breathe in and breathe out. Slow down. Calm down. Don't worry. Don't hurry. Trust the process.
To hear more healing gong meditations, visit terrywilder.com.
Indian saint and mystic Kabir is quoted as saying, "One drop of divine love can turn you to gold." Immerse yourself in the work of Kabir with acclaimed poet, author, and spiritual teacher Andrew Harvey in his book, Turn Me to Gold, 108 Poems of Kabir. Andrew shares the powerful and timeless words of Kabir in a way that is accessible to all. With beautiful photography by Brett Hurd, this is a book you will turn to again and again. Available now at Amazon.com or unity.org/shop.
Would you like to show your support for Unity Online Radio? You can donate easily on your phone by texting the word VOICE to 50555 and donate $10 to support Unity Online Radio. It's easy to do, and your offering will help us keep inspirational and positive programming on the air. Remember, just text the word VOICE to 50555 and support your favorite shows on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Discover what your dreams are trying to tell you. Join dream expert, best-selling author, and hypnotherapist Kelly Sullivan Walden for Ask Dr. Dream every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 12 p.m. Central. Kelly will awaken you to the wisdom of your dreaming mind with expert interpretation, as well as introduce you to fascinating guests. Each week, you'll get information you can use to help make decisions and gain greater self-awareness. Join the show live or listen later on demand here on unityonlineradio.org.
Call now with your question or comment. 816-251-3555. That's 816-251-3555.
We now return to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach.
So welcome back to today's show. I'm with Victoria Echamendi, and we're talking about interfaith and multicultural ideas, both in general and specifically to the Unity movement and New Thought in general. And we've been wide-ranging in our discussion so far, and we left the first segment with a message from Arun Gandhi that you talked with him. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, Arun Gandhi is the grandson of Mahatma Gandhi, and he, the last 3 years of Gandhi's life, Mahatma Gandhi, Arun lived with him and was spent an hour every day, and his grandfather planted these incredible lessons and messages, and he was a very shy kid, and he said, you know, no one in his life would have ever thought he would be touring the world sharing his grandfather's message. We just had the opportunity to have him in Portland once again. I've been all over Oregon with him and hosted him at Unity Village for a World Day of Prayer several years ago. But this time we were at a large high school, Madison High School, and it's almost everyone there is on free lunch and has a financial challenges, these kids. And they got grants, and all the kids got to read the book, and they did it in social studies and art and every area. And so they cheered when he stood up. They were just thrilled to have him there. And then we met with a small group of their justice and peace, I guess you would call them clubs. And they have these groups around sexual harassment, white privilege, financial discrepancies. And so here are these high school students asking Gandhi questions about how to handle this in their school and in their lives. And I just saw the light bulb go on. It was just amazing. As he tells stories that his grandfather taught them when he was around their age, it was just amazing. But their commitment and desire to social action, you know, that's a fire. We want a light, and we want that fire, as Arun's newest book is called The Gift of Anger, and he says you take that anger and you use it as a passion. You learn how to use it wisely. You don't just let it explode. So it was great to see that in our young teenagers. There's so many stories today about teenagers. We don't hear those positive stories.
Right, exactly.
I wanted to share that, yeah.
Well, it fits back into what we talked about with Jung again, you know, the shadow side. Every part of ourselves is useful, right? Even anger. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people in Unity mm-hmm. don't like that idea. Oh, no, we mustn't be angry.
Yeah.
But anger is a human emotion, it's just a raw material, if you like. It can be brought up into the light, right? It's useful.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Of course, if it's just thrust out at other people, you know, in hate, then that's not helpful. But if it's brought up into the light, there's a lot of energy there, so it's good. And a lot of people are feeling righteous anger right now.
I know.
And frustration in our world, right, from one side or the other.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, you know, some of it is coming out in inappropriate ways. But what it's speaking to me is it's time for change, right? There's new things coming, and we want to be a part of that. There's a narrative poem by Rudyard Kipling talks about this man who'd achieved so much in his life, you know, in terms of wealth and power and this, that, and the other. But he hadn't really helped anybody. And at the pearly gates, you know, he's questioned by the God or spirit. And he tells the God all the things he's done, how magnificent his house was, this, that, and the other. But then the spirit says, yeah, but what have you done for others? And he searches himself. He can't find anything that he's done. And so he doesn't make the cut, basically. But so often we put a lot of store in, you know, the things that we say, the house that we have, etc. But are we doing anything that's really going to change anything, you know, for the good in our world? And I love the idea that we are beginning to see that shift now. And as you said, millennials are tired of talk and they want action.
Right.
So this is part of the reason you've started this this task force. It's got a big name, isn't it? The Global Initiative Interfaith and Multicultural Team. Tell us what your vision is for that.
So when I was retiring, I was just like, what is mine to do? Because I knew I was complete with center ministry. And this passion for interfaith and multicultural connections, as you've pointed out, began as a child. And it's doing ministry, of course, my congregation was my focus, and I always was interweaving these pieces, but now I wanted to make it my full focus. So I went to the board of Worldwide Unity and made a proposal, and they said yes, unanimously. And so it was very conceptual at that point, and it's moved very quickly, and we have a fabulous team of people who are experienced all over the country, which was my goal, to have someone in all our regions working. And I did all this research, I found that it is happening in every state, and I'm sure worldwide in Unity. There are many, many ministries and groups doing interfaith and multicultural work. So our vision, and I'll just name a few, is to have interfaith programs and curriculum in our ministerial and licensed teacher training. So many people say to me, well, I don't know what to do. I don't know how to make those connections. So we want to give people some ways to connect, but also the background, the historical piece of how we find the golden thread in the golden rule throughout the world's religions, and we find similar stories as they go. So as a minister, that people would be able to represent that. We also want to do interfaith retreats at Unity Village, not about interfaith, but actual coming together, all faith, and praying together and eating together and doing service together. And we're also developing, a partnership with groups nationally and internationally. And that's one of the reasons I'm going to the World Parliament of Religions, and I leave tomorrow, is to create those connections. And we do have a new Facebook, which is for ministers and licensed teachers, and it's the Unity Interfaith Forum, if anyone wants to check that out. So that's just a brief. And I did want to just give a few examples. Would you like to hear some examples of what people are doing?
Of course.
In our ministries? Right. So in Louisville, Kentucky, the Unity Center there shares their space with a Zen center, Zen Buddhist center, and they often do services together. In Florida, there's a group in Pompano Beach that do, they call it Jam Concerts, Jews and Muslims and More, J-A-M-M. And they do this twice a year, and they have big turnouts, and they've started a nonprofit together, and Unity is one of the leads in that. In Albany, New York, they have an interfaith at the Unity Center, an interfaith service every Sunday night. And then I know you've done work. I've done one in Oregon. We can look at in Kansas City at the temple, all the work they've done in Iowa, Idaho. We can go on and on. And this is one of the ways I want to share with people the on the Facebook to be able to see the work that is being done across the country. And it's not the fringe now. It's the core of us. It always has actually been the core, and we are standing up and making these connections and building relationships and in the heart of what Unity really means. So I'm very excited about that.
I think you make a good point, too, in the use of the word about, you know, because we can spend a lot of time talking about interfaith, it's a good idea, sure. You know, and explain to people what it is, etc. But there needs to be a shift from about to doing it, right? To living it, and that's hugely important because so often, and that's true in the spiritual path too. We can know a lot about something, you know, but then we don't actually practice it. Like I know a lot of people know a lot about meditation, but then you ask them how much do you meditate? Well, not really. I don't. Yeah. And it's like, well, okay, you know about it, but you haven't done it. Of course, this is the scientific model, isn't it? The scientific model teaches you more and more about things, but ultimately we have to have the experiential model as well, the intuitive model, which is what does that feel like? You know, how does that work in your life? We need both because you need a system, but then you need to be able to practice the system. It can't be just a system because systems are dead. You know, we have to imbue them with practical application so I'm thrilled that this is happening, and of course I'm honored to be one of the members of the team that Victoria's put together. So that's a double plus for me.
That's why
lovely.
I think things are moving so quickly because everyone on the team are interfaith multicultural leaders in their community. And so they already have experienced it, and they are all committed to this is about experience, not cerebral, not just
right, exactly. And of course, everything that we do on this show,
World
Spirituality, is aimed at educating people to that fact and talking about the extraordinary multiplicity of spiritual traditions. But also the commonality, the fact that you go a little bit beneath the surface and you'll see that golden thread that Victoria referenced earlier, it's all one. And but that doesn't mean we just become all syncretic and boringly the same, right? We are honoring diversity. And I think this is hugely important. It's not we're trying to make one global religion. We're honoring each tradition. But seeing that in essence that those traditions point to the same inherent truths, right? That there's commonalities, and those commonalities bind us in a way that nothing else can, because you know it's in the practice that we come together. We all want to love our children, for instance. That's a commonality. We all want the highest and best ultimately for you know our communities. You know, unless you're sick, a sick soul, as William James might say. You know, where you want to hurt other people, but those are few and far between. Those people, unfortunately, they get a lot of press, don't they? As we've seen in the last week, you know, with the murders and with the pipe bomb and all this. You know, there's some sad individuals there that have got hate in their eyes and in their acts, but But these are exceptions to the rule. You know, just I spent my morning taking somebody to surgery, and I was waiting in the waiting room, and there was a couple coming. The one was in a wheelchair. They were older folks, and one of the other people who was waiting in the waiting room saw them and immediately sprang up and opened the door for them. Mm-hmm. And I thought, what a lovely gesture. You know, I was sitting facing the other way, so I didn't see them coming, but he saw them and he was there to open the door. And little gestures like that, you know, are the hallmarks of our humanity, right? And it's so, to me, it doesn't matter how small the gesture is, just opening the door for somebody. But what that did was create goodwill and a sense of there's wonderful things happening in our world. It's not all terrible. And I think it's all those millions of little reaching out to others that makes a huge difference in our world.
So I wanted to tell you our purpose statement. The purpose of this team is to promote local, national, and international goodwill, just like you said, and cooperation in expanding the common ground. And that truly is, and I think this is a pivotal time in our unity movement, and we have the opportunity to be a unifying voice in a very diverse spiritual and cultural world. The first time I heard the Dalai Lama in Chicago, that actually was at the World Parliament's 100th anniversary in Cook's Park in Chicago, and there were thousands and thousands of people in this park, and the Dalai Lama was going to speak to the throng, and there were people throwing frisbees and dogs and baby crying and all these things, thousands and thousands of people. And the Dalai Lama got to the stage, and they had big screens. You know, I was football fields away from him. I couldn't even see him. But there was a wave of energy, and everything got quiet. No one, the dog stopped barking, the baby stopped crying, because we were in that presence of oneness. And the Dalai Lama said, I'm so glad you came, and I'm so glad you're honoring me, and don't go home and be a Buddhist.
That's right.
He said, we don't all need to be Buddhist. And he talked about the vegetables in the garden and the flowers in the garden. You know, we don't need all daisies or all roses. You know, then we don't have the wealth of that diversity. And so I've thought about that many, many times. Often we think, we look at one thing, oh, I want to do that or I want to do that, just to be the best of who we are. And to bring this positive, unifying voice of honoring that common good. I truly believe that's the message of unity.
And it's okay if you do want to be a Buddhist, too. You know, if you're called to do that, that's one thing. But, you know, don't just take it on because it sounds like a cool idea right now. You know, I really like the Dalai Lama. I think I'll become a Buddhist. No, it's to honor what's core in your tradition, in your heart, right?
I
try and label myself sometimes. You know, what am I? I'm a Christian, Buddhist, Hindu, whatever. And I give up because, you know, all those labels are just silly. You know, I'm beyond all those labels. You know, I'm into the mystical connection, and it's hard to pin ourselves down and say who we are. But I will say that, you know, I grew up as a Christian and a follower of the teachings of Jesus because it was all around me. You know, I came from that tradition. And it's still very meaningful to me, and you know, it has a visceral connection to me because I grew up in that culture. And so to just throw it out just because you don't believe part of the doctrinal system, it seems a shame, you know. So I love unity because it allows me to have a view of Jesus that is closer to my own, you know, that he was a great master and wisdom master and went through all kinds of difficulty to demonstrate the victory of spirit. And you know, I lift him up because of that. But do I see him as the one and only? You know, he's the great example, isn't he? Not the great exception, as we often say
exactly.
in unity. And so we are called upon to embody his teachings.
Yeah. And I had that same growing up and have for Jesus' message. But the one thing we have to realize is that there were many spiritual teachers across our planet. that were saying a very similar message, just different because of the situation and the geography. I always say Jesus wasn't an only child.
There we go. I like that. So tell us a little bit about more about the parliament. It goes on for a week. It's in Toronto. It's a gathering of huge amounts of people, right, from all kinds of religions. There's
going to
be seminars. Tell us more about it.
Well, it's an opportunity, I think, to once again, it's not. We have to be careful that it's not about. But it is about interweaving and learning from each other, going to workshops, presentations. We have many Unity ministers and teachers doing workshops. And, you know, there'll be Buddhist workshops, and there'll be, you know, Baha'i, and there'll be Sufi and Sikh and music and art. And there's a piece of it about women's issues across the board, of course, of all faiths, women gathering together. There's a piece of it about science and about caring for the earth. And so all of this that's important to us as global citizens is being presented there in a spiritual perspective, which is very important to me. I've worked in many areas with interfaith. We had a large interfaith group here for many years that we focused on issues around the earth and caring for our beautiful Oregon and our forests and our worked with the Native Americans. So this is a key issue for us, as well as, gender issues, and there's just so many things. It's very diverse. So that's the exciting part about the World Parliament. You can dip in, you know, to so many things and receive a gift.
The sad thing is it's probably not going to be covered very strongly by the world's media, because they're focusing in other areas. Because this is huge, but it's not huge to some. You know, if you're a celebrity doing nutty things, then you know it's all over all over the press and the media. Yeah. But if it's something like this, which is truly exciting, unfortunately, it doesn't always get covered. But I'm glad we were able to put the message out about it, and those of you who are interested can check it out. I'm sure there'll be various articles coming up on social media about it, and I'm sure it'll be somewhere in the news. May not be
right
on the front
and
page, but it'll be there.
We'll be going out and planting those seeds. So that's the
there we go
the important thing.
And of course, one of the important issues for me and the World Wildlife Fund has just put out a report that says there's been a terrible die back in species since 50 years ago, since 1970. 60% of populations of a lot of mammals, for instance, have been decimated because of human interference and consumption. And this is another issue for our time, isn't it? We just had a recent report by scientists on global warming. These issues need to be addressed by our spiritual understanding, and not just by our political understanding, because once we have an idea whose time has come, it will shift politicians. Politicians are generally reactive, but when enough people change their minds about something and have a new idea, then you know politicians follow suit. So we are the ones who are going to make the changes here. I think that it only takes a certain percentage, doesn't it, to reach
it
that
does.
Tipping
it
point,
does.
Right?
That's
and then things
part.
Change.
And our world is more at peace today than ever before. And we are working better, and that doesn't make the news. And we are working better than we ever had together than we ever have before. So there is that shift. It is occurring. It doesn't sell products.
Right. Yep.
And so it doesn't make the news. I had someone in my congregation that was a producer at a large television and he station in Portland. He said the reason is it doesn't sell cars. You know, people are attracted to that energy of anger or frustration, and so. But it's shifting. I truly believe our planet is shifting.
Well, you know, Ken Gordon was on the show a few weeks ago, the head of CSL, Center for Spiritual Living, and he said the same thing, and he believes, you know, the new paradigm is going to happen. moving away from that old fear-based paradigm to a creative-based paradigm. And it's going to have to happen, right? Because these old ways that our humanness shows up as, which is fear and, you know, fight and flight and those old paradigms, gossip, you know, excitement about the misfortune and all that, based in the idea of struggle and war, you know, that has to change, because unless it does, we're going to put the planet out of business, you know. It'll go on, but it'll probably go on without us, you know, because we're going to self-destruct if we don't change our ways. So education in this regard is huge, I think.
It is. It truly is. And, you know, Charles Fillmore was a scientist. I mean, not he wasn't a trained scientist, but he loved science. And this is all part of this. Science and spirituality are not separate. Science and spirituality are very connected, and we need to use our spirituality with science and with all the other things that we are discovering and work together. It's not one or the other.
Yes, very good. No, it's not an either-or world. It's a both-and world. And again, Jung says this. Many of the great philosophers of the 20th century have said this, and it's the way things are. It's the integration and the embrace rather than seeing separation. So here's to embrace, right?
Exactly.
We're getting towards the end of the show. Let me tell you about next week, and then we'll say goodbye to Victoria. Next week, I begin a four-part series on gurus and teachers, their influence on us, their role in our spiritual journey, their crazy wisdom, and sometimes their toxicity. So next week I begin by interviewing a longtime devotee of Sri Bhagwan Rajneesh, the controversial Hindu guru, and now known as Osho, and Pratiksha Bogardas, that's the guest, will share with me her time, and she was at the compound in Oregon when all the craziness happened there, and has lots of insight about that and who Osho is, and she still feels very closely connected to the core of his spiritual teaching. So join us next week for that. That's the first part in a series on gurus and teachers. Right now, though, I want to say thank you so much to Victoria for being on the show, sharing your wisdom, and getting us all excited about movements into the future. So thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you so much, Paul.
And thanks for listening, folks, to this show on this Voice of an Awakening World. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening. This is Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Let go of everyday worries and find your calm with positive prayer from Silent Unity, the newest in voice-activated technology, available on any Alexa-enabled device like the Amazon Echo. Each prayer and meditation on positive prayer will help strengthen, guide, and comfort you. To enable it, just say, "Alexa, open positive prayer." You can ask for a specific prayer on topics like healing, prosperity, and comfort. Give it a try today.